From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Marriage, at least in my mind, is a civil institution that should be allowed in support of couples who are willing to support each other. And whether it's same-sex or opposite-sex, I think everyone deserves the same opportunity to enter into the institution.
We have a job as state legislators to promote the family. And every child in this state, I believe, deserves a mom and a dad. And while my wife is back home taking care of my daughters, and my wife is indispensable to raising my children or our children, my children need a father too. And we are not interchangeable. A man and a father and a mother are not interchangeable in today's society.
I really never talked about schedules or roll calls. I think what I want to do is be sure that we extend protections to thousands of families across the state of Illinois. I think it's the right thing to do. I think it's a fair thing to do, and I think it's the just thing to do. And I think as history looks back upon this moment, it will be proud that we get it done.
How many of you all believe that homosexuality is not a civil right? Homosexuality is not a civil right because it is a transformable behavior. I'm not the only ex-homosexual. There are millions of us out here.
Same-sex marriage, still an emotional issue and one that has not been decided at the Illinois Capitol. Between that, pensions, gambling, plenty to consider at the State House as lawmakers got underway with their fall session this week. But now that the session is halfway over, will the big topics be sidelined until at least next year? We'll discuss that and more on this week's State Week in Review. I'm Sean Crawford, News Director for WUIS in Springfield, filling in for Bill Wheelhouse, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, also Amanda Vinicky, our State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio and WUIS, and Brian Mackey, State House Reporter for WUIS and IPR. Our guest this week, Dave McKinney, he's the State House Bureau Chief for the Chicago Sun-Times. Dave, thanks for being with us again.
Hey, Sean. Thanks.
Well, let me start. I'll start with you, Dave. Same-sex marriage, we knew that they were going to have some rallies, big rallies at the state capitol. But in the end, does this change anybody's mind in whether or not somebody's going to vote for this or even have a chance to vote for this issue or even against the issue, I guess, when they come back in early November?
Well, I mean, I think it's sort of a standing rule here at the Capitol where these rallies that you see come and go over the years, they don't really move the needle very often. And, you know, while the theatrics involved on both sides of this made for, you know, colorful copy for all of us, you know, I really don't think that they, you know, cause things to change very much in the vote count. And right now things still seem to be like, you know, a few votes shy of 60, you know, I've heard as low as 55. So no, I don't think that there was probably at the end, you know, a real dramatic impact on how this thing's going to play out or whether we'll see a vote in a couple of weeks.
And Amanda, you were at the rallies. Your thoughts on what you saw, and did you get any feel that they were any closer on this topic?
You know, like Dave, I'm not sure the rallies had any effect on that, but I definitely think that there's a lot going on behind the scenes, behind those rallies. Rallies can be very helpful, I think, in energizing a base. So not to say that they don't have any effect at all, but just not maybe any effect on legislators who are going about doing their own business outside of that. Things that could perhaps maybe move the needle would be, for instance, a poll that has been reported on this week that showed in certain Republican districts, for example, those of Hinsdale Republican Representative Patty Bellock and also Representative Sandy Pihos, that more of their districts and voters there don't have a lot of name recognition for those incumbents, but also that they favor same-sex marriage. It's those sort of things. I also know that legislators have been getting tons and tons of phone calls, that there have been attempts to change over voters and apply pressure through things like, you know, campaign mailers already. And that's from the advocates of same-sex marriage. From the opposite side, there's most definitely the threat from the anti-same-sex marriage folks that they will be able to run somebody against an incumbent if somebody votes for same-sex marriage. So that's kind of really the political reality that is facing everyone here as You have also a divided community when you look at the gay rights community, some of whom say that, no, we want the bill called no matter what. Even if there aren't enough votes to get it passed, we won't know until we try. And we want to know who to be mad at. We want to know who our allies are. There's also the thought that that could very much set back a movement, get people on record that would later have a hard time voting for it because then they would look like flip-floppers. Hearing word, for example, that a lot of members of the Black Caucus are saying, hey, can you wait? We want to wait until the filing period is over. So those are really the dynamics at play.
What occurs to me, exactly what Amanda said, the key date, I think, is, I believe, December 2nd, which is the end of filing period. And so if you're someone who is in a district where you're not quite sure how your voters, you know, there's kind of equal sentiment one way or the other, and you're in a safe district, as most districts are for the general election, your concern would be at the primary. And so you're going to wait until you're sure that you have no primary opponent in your party, and then you can go ahead and kind of vote your conscience. And so I think if there were a secret ballot, the same-sex marriage bill would have been approved, you know, last spring. But because it's not a secret ballot, because people are on a recorded roll call, they want to make sure that they have their, what would you say, that they know what the playing field is going to be for the primary before they're willing to commit themselves.
Well, someone who does have a primary opponent, in fact, a few of them, is Kirk Dillard. We heard him at the start of the show, a Republican. Sounded a little awkward to hear Kirk Dillard, that hardcore opponent to same-sex marriage. I don't remember him coming out this way talking about civil unions like that when that was being discussed.
Well, I think part of it, in the case of Senator Dillard, is he was very narrowly defeated in the Republican primary for the gubernatorial nomination back 3.5 years ago. And so his kind of decision was, okay, I have to take myself farther to the right to try and appeal to the more conservative base in the Republican Party, so I'll kind of say or do whatever is needed. And then if I win the nomination, I'll try and kind of slide back towards the center because, as we found out in the last election, when Senator Bill Brady of Bloomington was the Republican nominee, very conservative candidate, that just didn't play in Illinois.
Well, and I think, you know, compared to some of the other language we heard at the anti-same-sex rally, you know, Dillard's comments were pretty conciliatory, actually. I mean, he was not, you know, really one of the flamingly ardent people against it, I didn't think. But, you know, Charlie's right. I mean, he's moving as far to the right as he can for the purposes in the primary. And the question for him is whether he's gone too far. And I think, you know, we saw two candidates in the Republican gubernatorial race who were no-shows at that event, Bruce Rauner and Treasurer Dan Rutherford. And, you know, I think that for both of them, you know, that positions them pretty well to be, you know, going into a general election. I mean, both of them, I mean, Rutherford has been on record saying that while he has supported civil unions, he doesn't support gay marriage. Rauner's position on gay marriage is much, much murkier, just like many of his issues. He says that he thinks this is an issue that voters ought to decide by referendum. But the fact neither one was there, I thought, was telling. You know, Bill Brady was there. And then, of course, on the Democratic side, I mean, it was just like, you know, virtually every you know, office holder that mattered. I mean, aside from rank and file members that were not there, but Speaker Madigan was not there. That was an interesting component, too, to among the no-shows. But, yeah, Charlie, December 2nd is the key date, and I really have a feeling that this thing is going to go probably into the spring, if then, before we see some resolution.
And well, I want to say it's interesting. I was just going to add about Senator Dillard. It is kind of interesting to me that he's chosen to run this more conservative than thou campaign because, yes, he was defeated by Senator Brady, who was the more conservative candidate, but arguably he lost because there were two other moderates. And if he would have won those votes or just a tiny, tiny fraction of the other moderate Republican votes, he would have easily won the primary last time around. So it's kind of an interesting – I think it's an interesting choice on his
it'll
part.
It'll see if you kind of fall subject to that. I think what some have just – the John McCain syndrome, you know, of going so far to the right that you lose some of the people that the moderates that would have gone for him, the people that you've heard, hey, Dillard would have won the last time around. That's a position that he's placed in. In terms of the Speaker Madigan, I don't know, a lot. It is interesting that he wasn't there. That said, the speaker is definitely not the guy that you always see in front on rallies. I'm not sure how much we can make of that per se. I did speak with one opponent of same-sex marriage who said that he thought Madigan and Cullerton were not acting as appropriate Irish Catholics. And, of course, that was interesting because you had seen the bishop of the Springfield Diocese here come out say that anybody who showed up at his cathedral wearing a rainbow sash would not be permitted to partake in the services. And the governor, who is also an Irish Catholic, said that he did not agree with that message. We have heard that the speaker is making calls and trying to advance the roll call. And again, who knows if we will see a actual vote during this fall veto session. Looking forward to that December 2nd date. I think what will be very, if that does not occur, will be to watch the gay rights community. Again, I looked at a blog that had basically with a tracker following Representative Greg Harris, so much attention on him and if he has done enough in that community. Again, kind of some more people that really want to press the matter and call it for a vote now, where I think he may have some cover in not calling it now. He hasn't said either way. He's been very careful in any of his comments, as we heard at the beginning of the show, but would be that if a vote does happen during the veto session, the same-sex marriage legalization of it would not take place until over the summer, and that gets into some timing and some technical issues. Whereas if a vote were to occur during the regular session, then it could be effective as early as January.
You know, I think back to Dillard, the thing that I find interesting is one of the groups that was principally behind the anti-same-sex rally is the Illinois Family Institute. They're based out of Carroll Stream. And someone pointed out to me that you know, while the Southern Poverty Law Center is regarded as maybe a left-leaning group, I mean, they are kind of the authority group when it comes to hate groups. And that group has declared the Illinois Family Institute a hate group. And so if I'm Dillard, you know, I would think there would be a little bit of anxiety in associating yourself too closely with a group like that, especially going into a general election.
And just to be clear on that, Dave, are we talking they've declared that simply because of this one issue, or are there other reasons?
Well, it's the Southern Poverty Law Center, you know, they deal obviously with racial issues. They've taken up a, you know, a big gay rights kind of wing of their group, and so that's where they're targeting them at because of the things that they're saying. And, you know, clearly at this rally, I mean, we were hearing, you know, as I said earlier, I mean, Dillard, I thought, you know, when he's talking about every kid should have a mom and dad, I mean, that was pretty milquetoast. Mm-hmm. You know, you were hearing people at that rally that were saying, you know, gay people and their lifestyle are degenerates. They live a disease-filled lifestyle, you know, and it was that language coupled, I think, with the language coming from the you know, Bishop Paprocki's office, as Amanda alluded to, you know, calling, you know, anybody that would come and pray the rosary at Mass in support of gay marriage, you know, blasphemers. I mean, you know, that kind of language, I think, with just an independent voter who maybe not is, you know, maybe isn't as tuned in on one side or the other, you know, you just sit back and scratch your head. I mean, this is just, you know, so I don't know. I think there is a risk in associating yourself too closely, you know, with some of these hardcore people that are involved in this.
Hardcore people who try and say they make the point, you know, we're not bigots. This is, we don't disrespect the individual, but we disrespect the lifestyle. I think there is very much a tone, especially when, you know, I spoke afterward with some of the people on the other side. It's very diametrically opposed, these two rallies.
Well,
let me ask a complete difference those 2 days.
And let me ask Charlie. I'll throw this to you. I mean, can't reasonable minds disagree on this issue a little bit? I mean, people who have been raised in the Catholic Church, who may have been taught a certain way, for example, can't they say, you know, that, you know, say, I'm not for same-sex marriage, but I don't want to go as far as what some other people are saying about these folks, but maybe I just can't back this issue. Can't you have those religious objections and still be a reasonable person?
Well, I think you can. As a matter of fact, there's some polls that suggest a majority of the rank and file, the, you know, people who identify themselves as Catholics, support the idea of gay marriage. I think it comes down to the attitude that you have your faith in what you believe and you follow your tenets, your precepts of your faith. But in a pluralistic society, such as the United States in which we live, you don't try and impose your beliefs on other people who don't share them. You respect the other person. To me, that's, what would you say, that's kind of the necessary accommodation that you make in civil society when you have such a wide diversity of beliefs and you don't demonize people who don't agree with you. And I think sometimes people who get filled up with this religious fervor have the attitude that if you don't agree with me, you're going to hell. And I just don't share that belief.
Well, that's interesting. You know, on the pro marriage side here, I mean, you had obviously somebody mentioned Governor Quinn being Catholic, but you know, Senator Dick Durbin, who was there, Catholic, Comptroller Judy Topinka, the only Republican on the rostrum, Catholic, Jesse White, Catholic. So, I mean, you've got a pretty significant cross section of statewide office holders who are Catholic and who are coming out in favor of this.
Some of the issues that are outside of kind of the religious component, or if you speak with those who are against same-sex marriage, they say that, yes, there are protections for church, and yet they say that there aren't enough protections in this legislation for if somebody in a private business wants to not allow a same-sex marriage to take place.
Like a florist or somebody that didn't want to cater to people or something like that.
Or a hotel, maybe, mm-hmm. that, you know, would hold marriages within a banquet facility, but because the owner doesn't want to allow same-sex couples to get married there, would say no. And that kind of that's been central to this fight, and it really goes back not as much to this legislation, but to in 2005 when the Illinois passed changes to the Human Rights Act, and same-sex individuals and homosexuals were included within that. And so you're kind of seeing, I think, a re-debate of that, what occurred in 2005, and really playing out in a significant way with now this piece of legislation, as well as with the civil unions piece. And that's where, again, you see opponents of same-sex marriage pointing back to, for example, Catholic Charities, which had provided foster care services for the state of Illinois, having to basically get out of that business and losing its contract with the state because the state said, hey, if you're not going to place children with same-sex couples who are in civil unions, then we will no longer work with you. So that's all coming back now.
You know, Amanda, you're talking about the hotel idea. I mean, that you say it goes back to 2005, but to me it sounds also like a debate that was had almost two generations ago in this country about blacks and whites. I'm sure there were plenty of hotel owners. I mean, we know there were hotel owners and florists and plenty of people who did not want a black and a white person getting married, for example, in their facility. So I think what this really comes down to is, does society recognize, you know, gays and lesbians as, you know, sort of a valid way to be? And I think that, you know, there are people who still, you know, want to fight against that and are very disturbed by that. And, you know, their religious faith tells them that that's wrong. And so I don't know that, you know, as Sean was saying, I don't know that when it comes down to it, that there is a reasonable minds can disagree. Society at large seems to be going one way, and, you know, there's going to be a dedicated minority that will continue to have a problem with that.
You know, one thing that I like,
a dedicated minority who are racist too, if you want to look at it that way.
I mean, one thing that oh, I'm sorry, Charlie.
No, I was just going to say that attitudes change over time, and as a matter of fact, if you look at the polling results, the older you are, the less likely you are to be supportive of same-sex marriage. The younger you are, the more likely you are to say, "What's the big deal?"
And go ahead, Dave. We'll let you have the last word on this.
Well, no, I just said, you know, a little kind of leftover from the anti SB 10 rally that struck out. We saw the black church really kind of on display there, and I thought that interested me because, you know, that's where this issue pivots so much on what the Black Caucus is going to do. That 20-member group of legislators in the House, and you know, there were two representatives, Bishop Larry Trotter, who runs a church on the south side, and then the Reverend Lance Davis, who has a church in Dalton. And, you know, those guys just, you know, they just delivered these stemwinder speeches that drove the crowd nuts, you know. And I just kept thinking while these guys were, you know, whipping people up, you know, to be one of these on-the-fence particularly black legislators and hearing that, you know, the echoes of their voice, you know, rambling through the building there had to be a little bothersome, you know, if you're like, you know, or not bothersome, but just, you know, you would take note of it because, I mean, these guys, they do have a lot of influence. The ministers do in that, you know, on that part of our political map. And, you know, I think they've done a pretty pretty good job of holding the feet to the fire in the Black Caucus.
I know you wanted Dave to have the last word, but I just have to jump in with one other thing here on this, that on what Dave was talking about the black ministers and the black legislators, black Democratic legislators in particular. I had a conversation with one of the members of the Black Caucus at the end of the spring session who told me this is not a civil rights issue. He wants to be clear about that. And I think that's another interesting divide here, is that you have people who are supporters of same-sex marriage say this is a civil rights issue. This is a civil right that, you know, we should be able to get the benefits of marriage that a straight couple would have. And I think there are some African-Americans who are a little offended at that notion. You know, I mean, yes, gays and lesbians have faced a lot of discrimination in this country, but it's not quite the same level as the 400 years of bondage and, you know, the things that the African-American community has gone through. And I think that's just another interesting little wrinkle, about the politics of this.
Well, just ahead, we're going to talk about pensions and what, if anything, could lie ahead for that issue.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
And we're back on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, Brian Mackey, and our guest this week, Dave McKinney of the Chicago Sun-Times. Well, pensions, certainly that's been a topic that we've been following for quite a while now, expecting maybe that lawmakers could do something in the fall. Amanda Vinicky, didn't really hear much about it over this past week. And is that a good or bad sign as far as them coming to some agreement?
You never know, because where I think that you see a lot of people very angry about the fact that pensions did not get bigger play during this fall veto session. That, of course, coming from the people who are calling for that to happen, union members who would, I think, love to see their pension benefits remained untouched, maybe just fine with that. But that we didn't see any action out in front doesn't necessarily mean anything. What you're going to find is that it's the backdoor meetings that are really telling in terms of if anything is moving when it comes to pensions. And we're hearing that did occur after Governor Pat Quinn, for example, went literally months without reaching out to members of the conference committee that was assigned to deal with this issue. His office has made a point to say that he has had a couple of meetings at this point in time, and that he has met with the leaders, again, the leaders being like Senate President John Cullerton, House Speaker Mike Madigan, and that's really the people who will call the shots and carry the day. I still don't think, even though it appears those backdoor meetings are continuing and members of the conference committee say that they are constantly in touch and that they're close, that's the same line that we've heard for quite some time. And once again, it's that December 2nd date, but less about filing and more about just the election ahead. And I'm not sure that we will actually see this called for a vote during the veto session.
Well, now Quinn came out and he said this week, hey, that's okay that they didn't do anything this week. He said something to the effect of there was some good groundwork laid for possibly a future vote. This is the same governor that felt the need to, veto out lawmakers' paychecks. He's been on the stump talking about this issue week after week after week over the summer. And then he was very conciliatory in the fact that they didn't do anything this week. Does that, can we read anything into that?
Well, I mean, I think he's, I will grant you that the rhetoric from him has toned down slightly, but he's also continues to say that on a lot of these major issues that you see kicking around down here, tax incentives for ADM, gambling expansion. I mean, he wants nothing to do with any of them until pensions get done. I mean, he's still holding firm to that, and so, I just think that until we see something on pensions, everything's just blocked up, and we're not we're not going to see movement on some of these other issues.
At least perhaps. I think you've heard some comments from legislators that say, hey, we can do this without the governor. He's not very central to our discussions. And so when you look at ADM, that may or may not move, at least out of the General Assembly without him. We could see, however, if any sort of bill gets to the governor's desk, that really being when the governor will be called to have to say, you know, hey, are you going to be responsible for not signing or not signing this or doing or not doing this? He said that, for example, if same-sex marriage does get to his desk, that's something that he would act on right away. He sees is outside of the pension discussion because it's not a financial issue, and he puts the rest of those central policy matters into that pension umbrella because they affect the state budget. That Quinn has toned down the rhetoric, I think, could be for several reasons. Number one, I think it, you know, people really have been getting bothered, and it became quite public that he, you know, wasn't really doing much to help out with pensions, it seemed. I think also that when it gets to the question of the leaders, he, it's easy to kind of insult or make comments against the General Assembly at large, but he is running for re-election. He no longer has an opponent on the Democratic side, so he may it may be in his favor to stay in the good graces, at least as much as possible, or he has been with the Speaker and the Senate President. And so when questions are kind of directed and he's having conversations with them about this, toning down that rhetoric in order to get things done behind closed doors, so he can't be quite as vitriolic in public.
And Charlie, you're not banking on anything big happening this session.
No, and for the simple reason, and again, this is kind of the same thing with the same-sex marriage bill, because of the way the Constitution is written and because of the way the laws govern when bills become effective, for something to become effective immediately requires a three-fifths vote if the vote occurs between the 1st of June and the end of December. On the other hand, if you wait and do it in January, you can do it with a simple majority. The difference in the House is 11 votes. In the Senate, it's 6 votes. Nobody believes that when the pension bill finally is called, it's going to get an extraordinary majority. If it had that kind of support, we would have passed it already. So to me, it makes a lot of sense to wait until after January when you can do something, have it effective immediately instead of passing something now and wait 8-9 months before it becomes effective. And that just strikes me as common sense. A lot of times I think on an issue like that, on an issue like gay marriage, the people who are most fervently involved on the outside don't have a good feel for the legislative process and don't understand some of this, I guess you'd call it inside baseball, but which really has an impact on how these public policy issues are resolved.
And Charlie, we're time for notes from the field. I'll stick with you.
Okay. The state's casinos, speaking of money matters, had asked the Illinois Gaming Board to be allowed to stay open 24 hours. They're only allowed to be open 22 hours now. And last week, the Gaming Board said, nope, you have to close for 2 hours. And the gaming industry argued that the state would see millions of dollars more in revenue if they could be around the clock. They said they get competition, particularly in the St. Louis area, from casinos across the river that are open 24 hours. But the gaming board said no. And I guess they just didn't want people in the casinos until they die for lack of sleep or lack of food, just sitting there at the slot machine like a robot, plunking in the quarters or the nickels or whatever.
Dave McKinney.
You know what, I thought it was sort of interesting because, you know, we have all this pension discussion and everything, but during a scrum with Governor Quinn, you know, the question about the maintaining the tax increase came into play, and it was just interesting watching Quinn react to that. And I think, you know, we asked him like 3 different times, do you favor extending that income tax increase that expires in January of 2015? And he just was slippery as could be on that question. So that's going to be our 2014 issue, I think.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of State Week. I want to thank Dave McKinney of the Chicago Sun-Times. And you can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org, or if you're using a desktop or laptop, you can also find it on iTunes searching for State Week in Review. The production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.